This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
This is the August 5th meeting of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee. Thank you all for being here today. And as Jake said, the room is going to tip because everyone but two of you are sitting on our right, but that's okay. You must have some plan. We don't. The outliers are right in front of me. Before we get started, I am going to take roll. Kimberly Flenner?
Here.
Judge Good?
Here.
Judge Kuhl?
Here.
Sherry Carter?
Here.
Kim Turner?
Here.
Alan Carlson?
Here.
Jake Chatters?
Here.
Debbie Norrie?
Here.
Judge Cope?
Here. I am Lori Earle. I am here. Chris Volkers?
Here. Mike Roddy?
Here.
Judge Lee?
Here.
Judge Holland?
Here.
Mary Beth Todd?
Here.
We have perfect attendance. Also present is Zlatko Theodorovich, Colin Simpson, Leah Rose Goodwin, and Stephen Chang. Anything I forgot?
No, okay.
It is a public meeting. I'll remind you that the meeting is open to the public and being recorded. We have not received any public comments. If you could identify yourself before speaking today, that would be helpful for those members of the audience. The first item of business is approval of the minutes from our April 9th meeting. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
Debbie Norrie, I'll move.
Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. The first item on our agenda is an overview of the county maintenance of efforts obligations and civil assessments. It's a discussion item. This, as you may know, is on our work plan, which we will talk about momentarily. I am going to turn it over to Jake and any of our JCC experts who might want to talk about what this means and why it's on our work plan and where we should go from here. I'm sure it'll be a very popular discussion.
All right. Well, thanks, Cheryl. So this is Jake Chatters. I'll be very brief. I think Colin has the majority of the presentation today. But as you may remember, when we went through and built WAFM initially, one of the areas we did not address were other local revenues in sort of the general and broad sense. And so as it exists right now in our work plan, which, again, we'll get to as item two, this year we are going to look at all local revenues other than civil assessments, leaving civil assessments because of its complications with maintenance of effort for the following fiscal year. But given some of the dialogue that's been happening at the Capitol and elsewhere, as we've seen through the amnesty program as it relates to civil assessments, sort of felt like we needed to have a discussion about what is it that civil assessments are versus the maintenance of effort. And there's some, at least on my side, I didn't understand exactly how the maintenance of effort and the civil assessment work together. You always hear about the county portion of civil assessments, which I thought actually was the county portion of civil assessments, but as it turns out, that is not exactly the case any longer. So I thought we should get an overview of that before talking about the work plan, as sort of a hint. Probably need to talk about whether civil assessments move on to the work plan for this year, and then potentially all other revenues move off. That's sort of the hint at what may be to come on item two. But before we talk about that, I felt like we all needed to have the same understanding of what is the county maintenance of effort? What is the civil assessment buyback or reduction of the maintenance of effort? And how does that process work? So with that, I think I will turn it over to Colin. Do you need the microphone, Colin? Or?
It's a small group. I don't think so, unless we're concerned about.
Yeah.
Really?
Take the whole stand.
I feel like strange. Okay. So there are some. So there's some materials that were provided to you regarding this. There's attachments 1A, 1B, and 1C. 1A, and basically what I'm going to go over is the there are two maintenance of effort payments made by the counties that are required currently to be remitted in the Tropical Trust Fund. There was also another maintenance of effort payment that was required over roughly a five-year period that stopped in after fiscal year 2009 that I'll also discuss. The first one I'm going to discuss, I'm going to do this in sequence, is Attachment 1A goes over the county maintenance of effort revenue obligations. And what this was is this was based on the fiscal year 94-95 revenues, specific revenues that the county collected that they would remit up to the state to be used to fund trial court operations. When the Trial Court Funding Act came into place, AB 233 created these maintenance of effort payments based on those 94-95 revenues starting in 97-98. There's also another item that is the expenditure one. I'll get to that in a second. But this is just the revenue component of those maintenance of effort payments. So there have been some adjustments to these payments. Originally, they were, for the revenue side, it was basically $291 million that the counties were required to remit to the Trial Court Trust Fund, but those were quickly amended. It was amended by about $66.2 million, and this was replaced by general fund monies, but it was amended by $66.2 million so that it related to $61.9 million of city revenue that the cities would now retain. And it also related to $4.3 million for five donor counties that actually provided more revenues than the state actually funded trial court operations for those five counties. And so they were given an adjustment of about $4.3 million because of that. And again, it was replaced by general fund money. The next two adjustments you'll see, it's basically $1.7 million. And this was, again, replaced by general fund money. And what this was a correction because the original revenue amounts that they had identified for these counties were based on 13 months of revenue instead of 12. So they just did replace it with general fund money. The fourth item, about it's roughly $500,000, this was also replaced by general fund money. This item, I actually can't trace the actual reasoning for these adjustments except for as it relates to Contra Costa and Del Norte, I know that there was a $492,000 transcription error where they'd actually assigned the revenue to Del Norte instead of Contra Costa. So they did a correction there, and then they provided about $111,000 of relief related to those two counties. And for San Bernardino, I could not find the reason for that $348,000 adjustment. I just know that it was made, and that was replaced by general fund money. So now we get into the meat of the matter. These are the two items that I think are of interest to this subcommittee. The first adjustment was put into place by AB 227. And what this was a reduction in the county's payments related to their, in general, their fiscal year 2003-04 civil assessment revenues. So because of AB 145, AB 139, the civil assessment no longer was an undesignated fee. It was now designated to be remitted to the Trial Court Trust Fund. So to make the counties whole, the county's obligation to remit funds to the Trial Court Trust Fund was reduced by the amount of revenue they received from civil assessments in fiscal year 2003-04. Now, I mean, there are some exceptions, but in general, it was fiscal year 2003-04. And this total is about $48.3 million. And as it relates to that, really $2.5 million of that, which is Santa Clara, was a special provision that came into place later, but it was for the same reason. It was for civil assessment. But the Santa Clara adjustment actually came into place later. Originally, it was about $45.7 million. What actually occurs now, because the courts were not allocated a reduction, when these payments to the Trial Court Trust Fund were reduced, base allocations to the trial courts were not reduced. Instead, what occurs is every year, before the courts are distributed these revenues back, the buyout amount is offset. So in the case of Alameda, before they received any distributions, we offset that $1.8 million. We actually do it kind of pro rata. So the courts do actually receive some distribution during the year, but we do make sure that we offset that full amount. AB227 also had adjustments related to, also there is a government code section, 68085.7, that actually identified this process for reducing the MOE payments based on civil assessment revenue. So that put into place these reductions. AB227 also had reductions related to what were called the AB233 civil fees. And you can see that in Government Code Section 68085.2. And again, what these were based on, their the county's fiscal year 03-04 revenues, and their obligations were reduced by that amount. And the courts were not allocated a reduction related to this reduction, but instead the increase in the TCTF revenue was used to offset that reduction in the MOE payment. So that's the story as it relates to the revenue MOEs. The expenditure MOEs are much simpler. Actually, you know what? I think I'm going to talk about the undesignated fees MOE because I think that relates to revenues, and I think that and also ties into civil assessment. So I'm going to reference that really quickly.
Can we entertain questions first of all on the revenue obligation and how that worked, Judge Good?
Colin, could you explain the 48.3 again, please? You used the word they at one point. You used the pronoun, but I wasn't sure which they you were talking about. Could you try that again?
Sure. So the 48, I'm not even sure if this is working, but the $48.3 million relates to the revenues that the counties received in fiscal year 2003-04 because they were at that time, they were not designated. They're not designated for the Troport Trust Fund.
Civil assessment revenue.
That's correct. But they were not designated, not until January 1st, 2006.
So take Alameda as an example. You're saying that Alameda County in 2003-04 got $1.8 million in civil assessments?
That's correct.
Okay. And then
was certified by the county and the court.
And then what happened in fiscal 06-07 to make that adjustment? But why did they change that?
So AB-139 and AB-145 converted a multitude of undesignated fees and made them Troport Trust Fund revenue. So no longer could those be county revenue. So because of that, to make sure that the counties were whole.
They wanted to explain what are undesignated revenues. What did that mean?
So they were not designated to be remitted to a specific body, say a county or the Troport Trust Fund or the court.
So where did they go then?
So they would typically have maybe a revenue sharing agreement with the court sometimes related to that, but that's what we mean by undesignated. The statute did not actually state where the money should be deposited.
Right. So there was an authorization of the revenue to be collected, but where it went ultimately was not in statute. And then, so my thought.
When the corporate funding came in, it specifically talked about a number of fees and where those fees were going to go. But there were a whole raft of fees that were undesignated, that they were forgotten. And there was this huge back and forth over who gets what and what was, you know, from the county's perspective, they viewed this as county revenue because it went to offset court operations. And the court's position was, well, this is revenue that funds court operations and needs to come to it. So there, it was an unresolved issue for many years. So when they talk about undesignated, civil assessment was one of those.
Mary Beth?
One of the questions I had, because I knew this, but I haven't looked at it in a while, so I don't remember. But as I recall, at one point, I mean, some of this shifting resulted in a general fund reduction to the branch because it was made up through some of these revenues. And as I recall, that was the same time they increased civil assessment from 250 to 300. And I think that's important for us to have that background in history as we, you know, move forward with a lot of the discussions surrounding civil assessment and, you know, pros and cons about it from a punitive respect. But there really was some revenue shifting, and the general fund actually benefited due to some of this. And I don't know if you have that background in detail, but I do think that's important to have as part of our history so that it informs us as we have discussions going forward do want to restructure how these assessments are imposed. You know, in the past they took into account that these were revenues to the branch, and we need to continue to take into account how we're going to backfill.
Right. So that's actually the next MOE that I was going to talk about, is the undesignated fees MOE. It is specifically related to that. It was a county offset, temporary county offset related to a general fund reduction. Are there, before I get into that, are there any other questions?
For sure. I wasn't here until 09, so I wasn't here when this all happened. But why does, remind me again, though, I think I've been told, Sherry, you told me, like, Riverside didn't have any civil assessments?
The court had the collections program at the time.
Oh.
Okay. And it was an accounting program. I'm assuming that's why there are some of these differences.
That's what my question is, yeah.
I'm assuming that's right. Whereas in San Bernardino, either you had a split with the county or it was a county collections program.
So then you would have kept Riverside, for example, kept all the civil assessments.
There were even a few courts that were not yet collecting civil assessment in 06, 07, including Marin. Marin didn't start civil assessment program until 2008.
Basically, what this represents, Chris, is each county that had civil assessment cut a local deal.
Yeah.
With the county over,
The statute doesn't say the amount. Each county made their own deal.
Right.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And they were all contained in those court-county agreements,
right.
The court-county MOU that's required by law.
Yeah, yeah.
So the court and the county would get together and negotiate.
There was intense negotiation back in 97, 98, and forward over the disposition and use of civil assessment revenues because they weren't spoken for. And, again, the counties had an interest in it. The courts had an interest in it. And there is no rhyme or reason.
Okay, that's
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Completely locally
different. Like all of our funding methodologies at the time.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So I do have one other question, though. So, and Colin, you said that Santa Clara had a different amount other than the $2.5 million, and that's really kind of a different deal than what the rest of this chart represents for AB 227?
Right. So, and actually it's because Santa Clara at the time didn't have a civil assessment program. So they were just starting it up. So they came to this agreement that they would basically share in the revenues up to a certain amount, and then after that, basically, the court would keep everything. So basically, up to $5 million, they each got half. So the county would get $2.5 million. And when I say keep, the way they kept it was they would pay less to the Trumper Trust Fund. The county would pay less to the Trumper Trust Fund. But so that's why they were kind of unique, is because they didn't have anything. This was just a special agreement that they came to.
So just if I could walk through, just make sure because like Chris, I wasn't involved in this at the time. So if we're looking at 1A, right, on the far left, AB 233, that is what was the initial revenue obligation from the county as a maintenance of effort when trial court funding began. This was the revenue that they associated
with. Funding, yeah.
Right.
That's right.
Right. So they associated with the operation of the court.
Correct.
And then the next set of columns there, AB 233, were adjustments, you said, related to cities. But they were adjustments to reduce that MOE amount for some other reason that isn't really important to us now. But there was no change in what the courts received. It was filled with general fund money.
Yeah, it was filled with
from
general
the state.
Fund money. Just,
right. So basically when AB 233 came into place, they basically put in a multiple statutes. So you'll see the first column is 77201, and then the next one is 77201.1.
Okay.
So basically what they were doing is they were phasing in state trial court funding. So they're basically saying that, you know, counties pay this much this year, but then originally it was in 2 years, you know, your obligation will be reduced. But they actually it actually occurred after just 1 year they did that.
Important to remember is at that time the state required the county and the court to each submit a declaration saying we agree with the number that the state has determined to be the MOE amount, and there was rarely agreement. So what happened was the courts and the counties were each submitting a declaration, and then it was going through a sort of a mediation process at DOS. And DOF was looking at the justification that the court had for the MOE should be this, and the county says, oh, no, it should be much lower, it's that. And DOF made those decisions in a dark room with no, you know, public comment, no, it was one of those deals where it just was, we got a letter back saying, okay, we've gone through your declaration, we've gone through the county's, here's the number. So I was looking at this number from Marin, and I remember the intense negotiation that we had over this $588,000. And the court had a much different number than that, but this is what essentially happened, was it was reduced by that amount.
Okay.
So
okay.
Did that happen every step of the way in all these adjustments?
No, it happened in this first one. The first one, when 8233 passed and the ink was dry, there were a number of things that had to happen very fast in the fall of 1997. And so in the fall of 1997, these declarations were due on October 15th. Don't ask me why I remember that. And then, you know, there were all kinds of deadlines that were absolute hard and fast deadlines because the statute was going into effect January 1st, and all this stuff had to be figured out between September 15th and January 1st. And so there was quite a frenzy.
And as it relates, as it relates to that, most of the negotiations were actually on the expenditure MOE side more than they were on the revenue side. And we'll get to that. That'll be the third item because that's not necessarily as important as it relates to what we're talking about for still assessment. Most of these adjustments on the revenue side were just related to the state deciding this revenue the city keeps from now on. And there were corrections related to 13 months of revenue versus 12 for 7 counties. But most of these adjustments were just state adjustments. The COF decisions we'll see when we talk about the expenditure.
Hey, Judge Good and others have questions. I just want to make sure I understand what Jake was talking about. Again, on that column where it shows Alameda with an adjustment of 1.796, you said something about you withhold money from the allocation. So if the WAFM allocation is made, do you
I think I understand your question.
If the WAFM allocation is made, do you then reduce Alameda's WAFM allocation by 1.8?
No. So the civil assessment distribution is in addition to the base. So I think your question is, if they didn't actually collect $1.8 million, do we do an adjustment? Currently, that has not been the there have only been one or two courts each year that have not met that. Okay, so there's the base allocation distribution, but
which
on top of that,
just to clarify, which is WAFM.
Well, yeah, part of it's based on WAFM, and then you have additional distributions such as reimbursements, and you have court appointed counsel or jury, and then you also have revenue distributions such as civil assessment, children's waiting room, and so those are in addition, on top of that base allocation. But as it relates to if they are short on that revenue distribution, do we basically offset against their base? No, that has not been the practice. And it really hasn't been an issue except for one or two smaller courts not meeting that amount. And but the practice has not been to offset that.
Where did you take the money?
Yeah. That's well. It was basically offset with
TCTF
resources, but again, we're not talking about a large amount,
yeah,
but
sure.
Yeah, but that was how.
What was the last time that happened?
Every year.
So I think part of it, Judge Good, to your question, and I have one follow-up here to finish this one before we go to the next one, is that when we were looking at WAFM as a funding model, we knew there were these other revenue distributions, but because of what we're kind of getting into here about, well, in one county in court, when they did their negotiation, Marin didn't have civil assessments when there was a negotiation. So for every dollar that Marin collects, Marin, that's local revenue to Marin, and whatever costs them to run, that comes out of that. But they run that program. Where in another court-county relationship, the county was taking that money initially, and so they need to collect up to $4.5 million before the court gets any money. And so that's a really complicated issue. We put it on the parking lot of issues on the work plan, but it's separate. It doesn't relate in any way currently to WAFM. There's been a question that's come up about, well, is that money that is used for general court operations, and that's come up as a dialogue which we never defined. And since we're not fully funded under WAFM, it hasn't been an issue to date. But I did want to talk one other question, Colin, to make sure I understand.
Sure.
Is that then the adjustment second from the right, so the 227, the 40, maybe 227, the 48 million,
mm-hmm.
That was really an effort to simplify, I guess what I look at is to simplify accounting. That essentially, it's like if I owe Judge Earl $10 and Judge Earl owed me $5, I'm not going to give her $10 so she can give me $5 back. I just give her $5. And that's really what that was intended to do, right, is that the counties were giving the state money and then the state was giving the county money. So why have that transaction go twice?
That's too rational.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
What happened when we in 97 was we're all scrambling to come up with how much money we were collecting revenue and how much we were spending. And the first time all the numbers from all 58 courts got put on a table, everybody looked at it and said, I didn't count it that way, and I didn't count that one. And no, that's my money. And we realized how different we were across the different counties. So some of this adjustment is merely everybody finally getting on the same path, and particularly on the revenue side. I'm sure Colin's going to talk about this. When courts discovered, wait, that money that the county was spending on something that I take advantage of, that's being spent on court operations, it ought to be included in the number. And those kind of things went on for years. But the revenue side was the same thing. Who's collecting it? Is the county collecting it? Is the court collecting it? You know, what deals have been made? It wasn't all that rational other than, okay, we got to be more consistent here, how we do this, I think.
Yeah. I may be overly simplified here, Jake, but before this bill, civil assessment revenue never went anywhere. It stayed locally. We reported it, so everybody knew what was coming in. So in our case in San Diego, whatever we collected, we would give the county $1.5 million. With this new process, everything now goes up to the state. The state essentially pays the $1.5 million and then sends back to us the remainder. So that's the simplest way to understand it.
But at this point, the counties get nothing from civil assessment, really.
That's,
I mean,
right.
They no longer have to pay as much on their MOE.
Yeah.
Right, so that MOE amount, which I think Colin's going to get to, in the code, the MOE amount has been reduced. So civil assessments, if I didn't collect the $1.3 million or the $300,000 that is in here for the MOE reduction, right, for our county, it's not like the county is going to have to pay more for MOE. Their MOE is fixed, right? I mean, that's going to be a trial court trust fund problem, not a county MOE problem.
Right. Basically, the intention when they implemented this was the council did not want to allocate reductions. So this was the way that they were able to basically recoup those monies was through an adjustment of the distribution of the revenue. So instead of allocating a reduction for those MOE payments and then just giving them whole revenue. So that was the intention just related to the council did not want to allocate a reduction.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that
news for us, especially on this committee, because in the old days you would have to unscramble what percentage of the civil assessment was in the county and what percentage was in the court. Is it all 100% county, no court, 100% court, no county, or some sharing? And so now what happened as a result of 227 is now we know that all the civil assessment revenue is in the court's ledger now. Regardless of what the MOE adjustment was on the county side, it doesn't really matter to us anymore. What matters to us is that, you know, because it's such a big dollar amount that we're all essentially accounting for it in the same way.
Yeah, and that was the time when they increased how much we could charge for civil assessment, recognizing that we now have this MOE we have to keep.
Yes.
Well, and we have to meet.
And that's
right.
That's going to be discussed in the next room because that's kind of agreement between the counties and the courts was basically forced by this next MOE. So are there any other questions?
I have one question.
Sure.
So when AB 227 was enacted and obligations were reduced, did you say that the amount that the counties had been remitting was backfilled by general fund money?
In these two instances, no.
Okay.
In these two instances, instead, it was backfilled by a new revenue stream.
Where did that come from?
These two instances being the right hand.
It was the burden was put on the individual county to collect, to pay back the county for what they lost.
And how did they do that?
Using Alameda from civil assessment
questions. I see. And that's these agreements that they had with their courts.
Maybe or maybe not. I mean, in some cases, if they hadn't started collection, that means in those counties, if there was no collection program in place, then in those counties, when they start collections later, they're not sharing any of it.
Right.
Those that had either the collections in their court, if they increased collections, they would keep all of it. Or, you know, so it was a hodgepodge of what was going on at the time.
Okay.
And so the burden was put on the individual courts to make up basically what the county lost.
I mean, just a couple examples, because I was in Sacramento when all this occurred. The amount that this county gets out of civil assessment was based on the 94-95 base year, and it was the deal was the county counted that as county revenue to offset their contributions to the county. If the court did better, they could keep it all. Now, in the case of San Diego, it's a very specific amount for a very specific issue that existed in 1997, had nothing to do with, you know, what the county was getting otherwise. They just basically said the court can keep it all. So every agreement is incredibly different, which is why nobody ever wanted to go out and unravel the mess.
Yeah.
It is a mess.
Yeah.
But the issue is, if we start talking about not having civil assessments, or even this new amnesty program that significantly reduces civil assessments, that burden becomes a big burden.
Yeah, very big. Yeah.
For the individual courts that are, in my opinion, making up county revenue that's a state request money.
Yeah, I think I think it becomes a problem for us because this money is now in the trial court trust fund that then gets allocated back to all of us as part. I mean, the $48 million comes in as civil assessment revenue, but correct me if I'm wrong, that's now in the trial court trust fund that is essentially then allocated back to the courts for however you use it. I mean, it goes in as trial court trust funds, and it sits there as any other fund would, no matter where the revenue came from, and then it goes to wherever it would go as part of other allocations, right?
Right. And I think you're saying that it loses its identity.
Right.
It's become a trial court trust
right.
fund revenue.
So but, you know, we remit.
The filing fee
yeah.
goes into the
yeah.
trust fund. Then that gets allocated. This is allocated by WAPA.
The $48 million.
And the courts remit their local civil assessment revenue to the trial court trust fund, and then it comes back. So it's, you know, it just it's one of the things that we talked about a couple of years ago. It's like, why are we sending
yeah.
this revenue up so that 2 months later it can get turned around and sent back to us? Why don't we just keep it and, you know, cut out the middleman?
Except we don't keep all of it.
But we don't.
$48 million.
Yeah, but we don't.
But we never did anyway.
Right.
Right. No,
so.
I just mean when we're talking about it, I just want to make sure we're – so there's the civil assessment money that goes up, the court
yeah.
collects, and then it comes back to the court.
Yes.
Because that's not part of, it's above this $48 million, right?
Yeah.
So it goes
right.
back to the court that collected it, essentially.
Yep.
But this $48 million that was reduced out of the county MOE, which is now then held in the trial court trust fund, that is trial court trust fund money that gets allocated, it loses its identity, using Colin's term, and gets allocated out as part of any other allocation.
I think if you say that, Jake, you're going to have a real fight on your hands with the counties because they don't view that as a reduction in their MOE. They review that as the continuation of an offset. Because they between gross and net, this was a way they were using to pay court operations. If it was in the base year, you know, out of their general fund, you know, their general fund was reduced by civil assessment. They're going to argue with you that discontinuing that would have resulted in a net increase to them. Their MOE didn't get reduced because it was never, you know, it was always inclusive of that civil assessment revenue. It was just a dollar for dollar across the board transfer.
I think that's where
this is the battle we have with our county.
See, I don't think he's talking about whether we reduce the payment to the county. I think we recognize you owe it to the county, right?
No, I think I look at it differently.
I think we owe it to the county.
No, I think the statute changed what the MOE amount is, and civil assessment. If I collected $0 tomorrow of civil assessment money, the county wouldn't suddenly owe $300-some thousand
right.
more to the trial court trust fund. The trial court trust fund would eat it.
That's right.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
The county is held harmless at this point.
That's because we moved it up into the trust fund with a pass-through, but never part of that whole equation.
That's
yeah.
right. Yeah. So
right.
I'm saying the same
right.
thing. The county made whole.
I'm just trying to say it's our problem.
It is our
it
problem.
It is not the county's problem.
It is our problem.
It's solely and wholly our problem.
I think we're in agreement it's not
right.
the county's problem. The county's whole.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
So they have no dog in this fight?
No.
Right.
They're going to get their money.
No matter what.
That's what the statute did. Is that it reduced their MOE
payment. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
All right. Any other questions?
Yes. Okay, go ahead.
I know. It's my own fault. All right. So so the next one we're going to talk about is the undesignated fees in a week. So basically what happened was 2003 created an mandated that the AOC Chamber Council and the and the California State Association of Counties develop a long-term distribution of specified filing and spending fees, sanctions, and penalties that were on the undesignated fees. And these were known as the A, B, and F revenues, and it included civil assessment. In addition, AB 1769 required that all the fines and fees that were not currently part of local revenue sharing agreements were to be remitted by the county to the TCCF in an amount not to exceed $31 million. So, the general fund appropriation for trial courts was then reduced by $31 million, with the intention that there would be no change in the funding to the courts because it would be replaced with these monies being remitted by the counties. So based on additional analysis, the courts and the counties determined that they felt that there wasn't actually sufficient revenues to get to that $31 million, and the counties were reluctant to make these payments with what was known as the undesignated MOE payments. It's it comes in a little later, but 6805.6 was the agreement they came to. So basically, DOF said, hey, we're just going to make this MOE payment permanent, and then the legislature said, you guys need to work together to come up with some kind of solution. You need to provide some kind of solution. So based on that, they came to an agreement, and there are several parts to it, but some of the key parts that we've mentioned were agreeing to basically fix the county revenues at 304, increasing the civil assessment up to amount from up to 250 to up to $300. They agreed with to this staggered reduction in that MOE payment, and they also came to an agreement on clarifying specifically where each of these revenues were going to go. Some of them were going to stay with the county, but most of them went to the courts. So as a result of this, that $31 million payment made in 0405 to the counties went down to, I think it was $5 million in 0809, and so it was 0910. I can't remember if it was 708 or 89. But either way, by 910, there was no payment. So what happened is that the intention was that this was going to be offset by the additional civil assessment revenues that we're going to be receiving, or the courts are going to be receiving because of the increase in the amount of the civil assessment from 250 to 300. What happened was a reduction was allocated to the courts pro rata for the $31 million. So there was a base reduction to the courts of $31 million, and the intention was then that the courts would offset that with additional civil assessment revenue. So 6808.5.6 is actually the statute that provided the kind of the reduction schedule, the schedule for reducing that obligation amount down to zero. And that is the story. So that also ties in to civil assessment, because that agreement was based on the assumption of we will offset this with increased civil assessment revenue. Are there any questions about that item before I move on to the expenditure item?
So that's not in here, correct?
That's not in here.
Is it scheduled by court, by county? So that $31 million and then the pro rata, phase out and all that stuff, is there a...
There was no scheduled statute. They actually had to, the judicial council actually notified the counties of their obligations each year, like how much each county has to remit related to that amount, $31 million, 20, 15, and 5. So,
does the council report that identified that? the discussion of that sequencing. It looks like you're looking at a council report.
So this is just a council report providing some background. But as it relates to a council report relating to the county obligation payments, I'm not sure. I haven't found one.
But that's, so, I guess the main upshot of that, or to bring it up, is that that was another item the county was paying for. It went away. They, in order to pay for that going away for the county, the decision was that the civil assessment amount was increased so the court could collect more for civil assessments than prior, and each court's funding from the trial court trust fund was reduced by the council with the assumption that that civil assessment money would essentially backfill it to make it whole.
That's correct.
So does that mean
and whether or not that happened or not would really depend on the, you know, what occurred in an individual court, whether people came to court for the traffic citations or not, or whatever.
The judges actually impose the full civil assessment amount, which is very unusual for judges to do because they take in financial ability. So, you know, that was a faulty premise in the beginning because that jumping at $50 as an offset assumes that every judge is not going to, the judges are not going to use discretion, and they do.
Mike.
It's hard to remember things that happened in the Pleistocene era, but some of us do. There was a, you know, Colin has really summarized it quite well because, you know, there was this reduction of $31 million, which was allocated to each of the counties on a pro rata basis. And there was an intense discussion about do we take the civil assessment money and apply that, say, from a statewide perspective, and the answer was no because every county was in a different civil assessment place. And essentially, if you were reduced by $1 million, the incentive for you to make up that difference was to go out and either implement or add to or do something different with your civil assessment, but each court was left to their own devices at that point. But the allocation was done across the board on a standardized basis within the branch based on decisions made by the then budget committee. And there was some initial thought about centralizing civil assessment revenue, and that was turned down in favor of the courts continuing their individual programs. And then, so your budget took a reduction operations to match that new, or by doing something with civil assessment, because remember you also had some courts that didn't have civil assessment programs, so for them it really was a net cut in their base budget.
So was it viewed then as the civil assessment was intended to be a backfill of court operations funding and not...
That's why Marin finally, that was the deciding moment for Marin to get a civil assessment program. I said to the judges, you know, you keep pushing me back and saying no civil assessment. Well, here, now it's real in our pocketbook.
But it is real. It was intended to fund operational costs.
Yes.
It was a $31 million reduction to our appropriation from the general fund. And to make up for it, we're increasing the amount of civil assessment you court can impose.
Yes.
It was very clearly intended to be an offset.
Well, this was a huge internal discussion because there wasn't a cause and effect relationship. I mean, they gave us the ability to increase civil assessments, but they never said you could use that to offset the $31 million. They didn't care. We were the ones that were having the debate about you can't take the money away without some kind of backfill. Oh, guess what? This might be a way to do that.
Yeah.
Because there was a real strong effort to take that additional $50 increment and to fund a centralized state case management system.
Right.
So
for example.
Can I just say one thing? Why? I mean, I wasn't here as part of this history, and it's an interesting novel, but for civil assessments, we all know they're in lieu of a warrant. Many counties may have the philosophical position that we are not going to impose civil assessments because our sheriff will pick people up.
Yeah.
Now, in big counties, they get stuck in a warrant bank because they have more than they can serve. But if judges in a community, and it may have been Marin, they may say, I'm going to issue a warrant. So, you know, we need to understand that civil assessments are in lieu of a warrant and would cost that defendant a lot more money by the time their vehicle's impounded with an impound fee, a booking fee, a processing fee. It will be a lot more than what they're being charged for civil assessments. That's the first thing. And the second part about civil assessments that I think is important to remember is that there is a huge cost to do civil assessments.
Yeah.
Part of this money is a direct reimbursement for those costs. So we're talking as if it's just, windfall. There's windfall. There's a slight piece of it that we get, but there is some reimbursement for that.
You know, Sherry is absolutely right. In the early years, civil assessment was additional, unspoken for, undesignated revenue. And it, for many courts, that was where the start of their reserves came in.
Yep.
Because you're spending your base budget, and then this was kind of on top of that. I think what has also confused the issue, though, is over the last number of years with all the cuts, civil assessment has now become a part of the base operations budget, because if you had to live within just your WAPM allocation, you'd close the doors. And so, you know, as I think somebody pointed out, you know, your budget really is your WAPM allocation plus additional associated grants and things, including civil assessment, and it's kind of gotten intermixed from the purist point of view, where it really was a windfall, and I don't want to call it that, but you, courts would use it for technology, or they use it for other expenses that the state didn't pick up. And today, I think that has, for many courts, become part of their base budget.
And I think that, go ahead, Jake.
Well, I think in terms of the other large, pull the focus back, it sounds like this was early on the beginning of putting the cost of the courts on the users and starting the user fee modality. And because we've seen increased fees over the last several years, and we're charging the people who come to court rather than having the courts funded by the general fund. And now we're seeing the pushback for all of that. And in the legislature and on the radio and on the TV, you're hearing people saying, talking about all these fees. So the legislature has said, let's reduce the general fund commitment, let's put it on the backs of the people, and now they're saying, let's take it off the backs of the people without necessarily recognizing that we have a general fund augmentation.
Jake, and then Sherry.
Yeah, I mean, I think the intent, just for today, part of the intent was to get a better understanding for, you know, this subcommittee about, okay, what is the MOE versus the civil assessment? And we talk about, even for me, until 2 weeks ago, I thought it was the county portion. And that's what I've always referred to it as. I didn't realize it was no longer actually going to the county. And so as we start talking about all of these nuances about, well, what does it mean as it relates to our funding model, and how, you know, to Sherry's point, you know, Sherry's saying, well, some portion of that is a cost to collect that money, some portion. On the other side, I know, you know, for my court, it's, to Mike's point, I couldn't have survived, especially through the cuts, without that civil assessment money. We would have shuttered doors. There's no question about it. And so it's changed how it's being, what function it serves may be different now than it was when they made all these agreements. And I think what we have to start talking about is, well, how does that all relate to how we're funding ourselves now, which is, you know, part of a different discussion where we need to get into different detail. This was intended more as, let's get us all in the same playing field as a subcommittee, so we understand what we're talking about. But
it's how much you know, how much effort do we put into figuring that out, knowing the landscape's changing as we're having this discussion?
Well, and I think part of it was, we know there's this discussion, this dialogue that's coming up about civil assessments, and making sure we keep in mind that, yes, this is in lieu of a warrant. You know, a warrant could be issued instead, and what does that mean to people? And
I don't hear that conversation, though, and that is the critical piece, because if civil assessments go away, judges will only have warrants for enforcement, and that's going to be a lot bigger hurt on these people that are in noncompliance in civil assessments.
Right, but that's, I mean, yes, that's... That could be, but I think what we're trying to talk about here is, well, what theoretical, let's say that happened, what do we do funding-wise? I mean, that's the political reality. But,
yes. I wanted to direct my comments to Judge Good, because I don't really see it as putting the fees on the people, because these are people who are not in compliance. And when I got to Riverside, how it came to my attention is that we had a huge problem with traffic with no-shows. And they were not doing civil assessments. They were issuing warrants for both traffic and misdemeanor. And so I did a huge study there in terms of the no-show rate, people basically doing this to the court for both misdemeanors and traffic. And it was amazing. I met with the sheriff. I had endless meetings. They went into a warrant bank, and they never got to them. And so part of it was, when you put a license hold on someone's license, they will pay attention to it. So it was really a matter of enforcement. Now, the side of that was, it did generate more revenue in Riverside. But if you'll look at Riverside, and kind of one of the issues that I think at some point we have to talk about, when Nash was in San Bernardino and I was in Riverside, you compare Every dollar. So when I got to Riverside, they had a very modest collection program in place, but I hugely expanded the civil assessment primarily to assist with the millions of people that were not responding to their warrants, and it created more revenue. In San Bernardino, Nash used to say, even if I do everything you do, I still owe $4.2 million first to the good of the branch. And so that was part of the discussion I think we need to have, too.
Right. I don't disagree with that necessarily. We had the same problem in Contra Costa where the sheriff was not necessarily in the warrant.
Yeah.
We put in the civil assessment program, and we have a different response now than we've had before. People now know they've got to come and be responsible for their tickets. I get that. But the notion that the legislature says, well, let's increase it to 250, it was enough to get people to court.
Right.
To 300 to backfill another cut we're making is
crazy.
Is indicative, though, of what they've been doing,
yep.
Which is saying, rather than take general fund money and saying that part of being a democracy is funding the branch, that we'll just make the people who use the branch pay for it.
Yep.
And I think certainly that last $50 increment has no other explanation. It was not needed.
Mike, did you have something?
Okay. All right, Colin, ready for?
Ready?
Page 5 or 1B?
We are on 1B. So 1B should go very quickly. There were just a few adjustments related to the payment, and I'll walk you through the logic of these. If there is, in some of these cases, I'm not sure of the logic. So, again, AB 233 had an initial amount of payments required by the county in 1998. It's about $890 million, and this was, again, based on 94-95 numbers, but in this instance, it was based on the amount counties have reported expending on trial court operations. So, this number was also quickly adjusted, and it was a planned adjustment, but it was quickly adjusted down by about $284 million. Yeah, $284.5 million. And this was a planned adjustment that did two things. One, the 20 smallest counties no longer were required to make payments to trial court trust funds, about $10.7 million. And then another $273 million, and I mean exactly $273.8 million were reduced in payments related to the other accounting. But I still don't know exactly what formula they used to assign that reduction. There's no like kind of percentage reduction. So I'm not sure exactly how they assign that reduction by county. There did seem to be some consistencies for some size courts, but really nothing. So I can't explain why, but for those other 38 courts, they did receive $273.8 million in relief from the county in 1999. The next column is what Kim was actually referring to. These were the DOF adjustments as allowed under 77201C and D. And so these were basically corrections based on counties saying, oh, no, these were grant fund monies or, you know, no, all kinds of varieties of explanations. So based on that, there was another $33.8 million adjustment. And I should note that all these adjustments, except for the very last column, all of these were replaced by general fund money. So anytime there was an MOE reduction, the general fund replaced. So that was another $33.8 million reduction in the MOE payment. Then AB 2788 was implemented on 990. What happened there? There were basically two adjustments. 18 more of the smallest counties were now no longer required to make payments to the Trouble Trust Fund. And then in this instance, there was a method to their madness. For the remaining counties, they allowed a 10% reduction to their payment amount. So that's how that that number was calculated, and that's about $96.6 million. So that basically gets us to the MOE payments by the counties that we have today, except for one county, LA, where in 0607, AB227, the same bill that made the justice related to civil assessments and AB233 fees also increased the payment by LA County related to employer paid retirement. And so this was an increase in their obligation by $23.5 million, and that was in 0607. So those four adjustments get you to what the MOE payments are today.
And again, all of the reductions down were offset by general fund.
That's correct.
Okay.
And we've also provided the statutes related to the MOE payments separately discussed tables because the statutes are long enough as is. As well as the two statutes regarding the adjustments for the civil assessment and the are there any other questions?
So just so calling that so the smallest 38 torts as they existed in
at that point in time.
At that point in time, right, which may or may not be the same 38, but
right.
As today. Those counties no longer have any maintenance of effort
expenditure
MOE.
That's right.
It's gone. So the only thing they would be paying for MOE at this point is whatever was on the revenue side remaining up above.
That's right.
And as other facility-related MOE stuff, but, right, that's not included in here. Facility
right.
MOEs are separate, yeah.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, facilities are completely different.
Yeah. Right. I don't want to get into that.
So,
I mean, if I'm reading this, just for historical, and this probably doesn't matter here, but for Alameda, let's say, and be sure for any of us, since we're on the top, if you were to take what the expenditure obligation was in the first column, so $42 million, and add whatever the revenue obligation was on the in 1B, right?
1A.
1A, I'm sorry.
Yep.
12 million.
Uh-huh.
Is that essentially what the counties were saying?
Yes.
That should have matched the court's budget, except for undesignated revenue.
That was the battle of setting the MOEs.
Yeah.
Was what's the county's general fund contribution, and what are the revenue offsets that they historically depended on? So that at the end, it was not 42, it was 30 in the case of Alameda. That's where the fight was over all that revenue because the county considered that to be an offset to their general fund contribution from day one. And a lot of us were arguing, well, no, that comes to the court, it should be with the court, and that's where DOF had to come in and basically make a determination.
Sure thing. Okay.
Any other questions for Colin? Everybody understands it clearly?
Just cool.
I was just going to say that this is a great overview, but I think in terms of policy making for the long run, I think we really need to have this in prose at some point. That is to say, with the supporting documents for, judicial counsel, votes and determinations that were made, people are going to retire who have this in their heads.
Yeah.
Or not. We may not allow them to.
We're going to return.
We'll bring them back on as consultants, of course.
Come back anytime as long as it stays up there.
And I realize it's so complicated that filling in all the detail is probably impossible, but to start with some kind of an outline at least, and then as we go along and drill down on specific questions. Because this is an overview, but we may later have specific questions. Hopefully we can sort of fill into that outline.
Judge Cope.
Colin, Rocco made reference to a judicial counsel report. Is there something available and where?
There are several judicial counsel reports that provide information. I basically went through. We don't even actually have complete record of everything that happened looking through the judicial counsel reports. I had to do a lot of research through just searching for old documents that maybe lean through. So it's not all there, but there are counsel reports I can refer to as related to, like, say, the AB 1759, like, that the background of that and the the agreement they came to that related to that 31 million.
Gary?
Well, so I'm curious where the conversation is going to take us next, because I do think we have reason to be alarmed. First of all, I think at some point we do need to address whether or not this should have been an individual county burden to make up the MOE payment, the adjustments that were done in 03, 04, I guess. And the second question is, because the amnesty program this year may push many of the courts that are collecting below their contribution to what was offset for the branch, I do think it's, you know, it's something that we need to be considering, because even apart from L.A., San Bernardino, you don't know what impact you're going to have, because you're not collecting civil assessments on any of those cases that are going through the new amnesty. So I think that this is something we need to be discussing, particularly as it impacts the funding for the counties that have this burden, and secondly, what impact it may have to this offset if they don't meet their mark, because it should not be borne by the other side of the county, the other side of the revenue. I didn't know where it was going, but I do think it's important this year, because that $50 administrative fee will most likely be kept by the collections people that are doing it, not the courts.
So I think in where it's going, I think there's probably two parts to your question. So this is Jake. We haven't been saying our names, but so whoever's on the phone, sorry. I think there's two parts. One is the revenue issue in the current year that may occur, well, current year plus budget year, right, that may occur as a result of the amnesty. And to your point about, well, what happens if courts now are not able to collect as much as needs to be put in the child support trust fund for the benefit of all, right? That's probably a discussion. I'm not sure if that's for this subcommittee, if that's the trial court budget advisory committee broader discussion, but I understand your point. The second one is that we never really talked about how does this all fit in. Should these revenues, or a portion of civil assessment revenues in particular, be counted towards a WAFM funding need? And really where this discussion was going is we have our work plan for this fiscal year. That discussion and dialogue was planned for not 15-16, was on the agenda for 16-17. But given all these other discussions about what's happening with amnesty, the other dialogue, where we wanted to take the discussion as well, should that now be added to the agenda for, should the agenda be revised for 15-16 to add that as one of the actions that need to take place in the subcommittee? And if so, our list was already really full, so something is going to need to come off, because that's my opinion. I don't know the staff can handle as many questions as I think we're trying to ask this year. So, that's where this discussion was going, was let's understand what is happening on the MOEs and civil assessments, and then look at the work plan and decide, well, do we need to escalate this issue to the current fiscal year rather than waiting for another year? And that's really the question.
And I would just offer that I think we should adjust the agenda. I think this amnesty thing is going to throw all of us who are have a civil assessment situation into a tailspin. So, and I don't think it can wait, because we're starting October 1st. It's going to affect this year's revenue and our expenses that we owe the county. So I think we should adjust. I don't know what you should take off, but I think we should make this the first priority, in my opinion, and resolve this civil assessment issue once and for all.
Well, before we get there, are there any more questions for Colin, or I'll move on to the work plan if there's not. Okay.
So I just want to, it's not a question, it's just a comment. I think this is, as we all know now, a super, super complicated, historically complicated, you know, many, many bills and so forth. I think we have to be really careful at how we frame whatever approach we're going to take to trying to come up with a solution, because you can get really lost in the weeds in this stuff in terms of figuring out equity and parity and whether this court and that court, you know, are on the same, you know. You can get, there's a million places to kind of get, you know, to spend your attention in kind of a not very productive way, just trying to understand the whole landscape. So to the extent that, and I don't know what the answer to that is, but to the extent that we can try to, as a group, frame how we're going to tackle the gorilla and how much of it we're going to just say, you know, it's like it's Chinatown, Jake, you know, don't look there. One of those things, you know. So you have to come up with an approach, because even a group of really smart people sitting around the table cannot untangle all the spaghetti. Colin has done, I can tell Colin, you've done an amazing job, months of research, I'm sure, to get us to this point. And the records are spotty. The decision-making, some of it was verbal. Some of it is not contained in a document. So that's just my comment.
To that point, and also to Judge Kuhl's point, I wondered if Zlatko and Colin, if you would be willing to put kind of what we discussed here today and your explanation of these things into writing for us. And attach what
been recorded.
Yes. So it could be just taking the minutes.
Part of it will be getting it converted to probably using like Dragon Speak type stuff to convert that to.
I think we have to distill it down.
I mean, it's a beginning.
And a starting point, but
that would be what would be the product.
But to include attachments, whether it's specific statute or judicial council report.
Yeah.
Love you too.
I mean, I actually have a second document where I have a bunch of comments and stuff already in there, so it's really just putting it into prose, I guess. So,
That's right.
Well, and I would recommend, you know, we might, as you approach that process, is something maybe a little more expanded for this advisory committee, but then it could be even digested down more into plain speak for as we do outreach with respect to this issue with external partners and whatnot.
I think that the history
very helpful
of Mike and Kim would also be helpful in terms of context, because we can talk about the technical steps, but unfortunately I think we're going to make sure we have to get their input to give it the full understanding, because the rationale and even some of the nuanced rationale that wasn't always necessarily articulated.
Or there. Well, and, you know, I wrote an analysis of the impact of AB 233 on administrative implementation of the bill. That was my court executive development project back in 1999. And so I can send you that because it's got the history of how we marched from the block grant days to the, you know, the many attempts to get a trial court funding bill passed to the moment that it passed to the implications for certain revenue lines, including civil assessment and so forth. So it's, you know, it's certainly not, it doesn't have the legislative backstory. I didn't know the legislative backstory, but it at least has sort of the context around the landscape at that time, and I'd be happy to send that to you.
Alice.
My
card. Yeah.
I attribute it. No. I think that we have to pull this up from next year to this year to the extent that I'm worried that the legislature and the folks that are all over the what's been going on already are going to suddenly look at this and say, what do you mean $300 gets put automatically? And they're all going to assume it is, even though it's not.
Right.
And
right.
How much money is this statewide? And they're going to cut that back without thinking about the fact that there's no backfill to this. And the impact's going to vary a lot across courts.
I did a study in LA just as a side point, and the average civil assessment that's actually applied is $75.
Yeah.
Because judges use discretion as
how
they
much
should.
Is
75. You know, they don't just judges use discretion when they're dealing with people in the courtroom.
They do.
As they should.
Ours is 163.08.
Okay, ours is 75.
Because we looked at the same.
In Riverside, it was, you know, like 180. So, you know,
it's
there
cultural.
There is no $300 civil assessment. You're going to apply it. Judges, talk to the people. Find out their financial ability. They apply judicial discretion, which they should. So, you know, I think that's important, too. It is a lot harder. It will be a lot harder on these people with a warrant than it will be a civil assessment.
And that we're going to have to make that point, because I agree with you. They knock down civil assessment and don't do anything else. They're actually just moving the problem into jail.
Yep. And impound fees and booking fees and all sorts of
law enforcement is going to say, give us more money to do this, because there's no way that they can keep up with that.
Sherry, that assumes, and what led us here to begin with, is the fact that law enforcement did not enforce those warrants.
That's right.
Because they weren't going to call someone in on a misdemeanor charge, and so essentially they were getting a free ticket.
It's mostly true, but there are a lot of them, they will haul just as far as the jail after they towed their car. And the cost for the people, too, go way up.
I mean, we had 800,000 in San Diego unserved warrants because law enforcement never did a thing.
Not only.
There were millions. They only
fight
them.
They won't even read the warrant. Yeah. They try to say, by the way, there's a warrant. You might want to clear that up.
Yeah.
Well, they cite them on the warrant.
Judge Kuhl?
You cite them on the newest fraction and tell them, by the way, you have a warrant.
Yeah.
Judge Kuhl?
So, in terms of the work plan, what would be the project we'd be undertaking?
So we can turn to that.
Yeah.
That's next on our agenda.
Other than understanding the problem, which I think is critical because we need to understand the issues in order to be able to talk to the legislature and talk to Office of Government Affairs, and everybody is talking to the legislature to dispel some of the notions that we've heard. So other than understanding the problem and the components of it, what would we be trying to do?
Thank you. Okay, so if we could turn to the last page of the packet, so if you're in the PDF, that's page 26. If you're on paper, it's labeled page 23 or 2A. So approved by this group back in April was the remaining work plan as it relates to the funding methodology subcommittee. Generally speaking, this has some feed into to WAFM. So I'm going to walk through what's on there, and then I'll get to your question, Judge. So. For this current fiscal year, 15-16, there were six items. One was to identify technology funding streams, working with the Judicial Council Technology Committee and the Court Information Technology Managers Forum. And that is the issue that we have. Technology is built into WAFM as part of the operating expense allocation, but there isn't necessarily, well, there is not, a dedicated funding stream for large capital expenses for technology or major purchases. And so, how are we going to deal with that going forward when suddenly courts reach a point where they need to replace 700 servers? I don't think we have 700. I'm making up a number. So that was that item. The second was to evaluate self-help center, self-help funding generally. As many of us know, self-help funding comes through in, I guess it's two separate allocations. It's considered a grant. It's considered a one-time funding, but it's been the same amount ongoing. The WAFM, the RAS study includes self-help as part of the resource allocation study, but
not all of it.
But Colin says not all of it on the RAS side.
Not the IMS portion.
No, no, sorry. The resource allocation study that calculates our FTE need includes self-help.
Right, right.
But on the WAFM funding side, the WAFM-related funding, as we define it, doesn't necessarily include all of that self-help funding, although I don't think even if it did, it wouldn't equate to the amount of staff required under the resource allocation study for self-help. So that interplay of what's included as, you know, WAFM-related funding, we really haven't addressed because some of it's coming out of the IMF, some's out of the TCPF, so that's a remaining issue to resolve. The 1058 revenue as an offset, just as a reminder here briefly, the way that WAFM works today is that the 1058 staff are included in the RAS study, but because that is grant-funded, what ends up happening is everyone's WAFM need is reduced by the amount that you receive specifically for 1058. So there's some degree of need that's left in there, even though it's not funded. So it's kind of this weird subtraction, because that's the best method we have, but we need to sort of evaluate that again, because it's really hard to explain. Even in my little 30-second explanation, I can see a lot of faces like, huh? Yeah, but it's there's no real good way, because it's in the RAS study, but you only get a fixed amount from the federal pass-through, so we try and remove that out. So the difference in needs still sits there in the funding model. Obviously, the court-appointed dependency council, there is already a joint working group working on how we're funding dependency council. Similar, there's in
just a question. Yeah. So does that, number four, does that really need to come back to the funding methodology working group at this point? I mean, there was a decision made a few months ago about
I agree. That's essentially done.
I think it's kind of done as far as we might be able to scratch it off our to-do list for the moment or move it to 16-17, you know, is something to look at.
And that's true. It's fine, too.
That working group. Yeah, exactly. Both four and
I think I agree with four because that's now going to go back to the trial for budget advisory committee. It doesn't need to come here to the subcommittee.
Right.
But five, my only concern with taking five out is if we're looking at three, which is evaluating 1058, and two, which is looking at the self-help funding, those kind of relate to five. So depending on what they come up with in five is going to influence to some degree. What's labeled here is two and three.
We might leave it in for now.
Well, I would agree with that because
unlike four, which is looking at funding of something other than courts, this is looking at funding of court operations, 1058.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably has to stay within the committee, I think. The report back.
Maybe that's what influences two and three.
Well, so.
And maybe two and three won't be possible this year because five is going on in another working group.
Well, five, the council requested. Wait. Did they request five to come back this fiscal year? Yeah?
Yes.
So,
yes, next Friday,
so,
right?
But the reason you could perhaps have two and three push if you wanted is if the amount changes. If you offset the 1058 and in one court it's $5 and it goes to 8, you just offset 8 until you look at it. So there isn't some urgency. You have to tie them together with what goes to the council. So if one goes from 5 to 8 and one goes from 10 to 9, the offset just would change until you tie them together, which I think is going to be a fairly large project.
Number 5?
No, no.
Oh, 3 and 4.
2, 3, and 5 kind of go together.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I think that's a big one, personally. But you know, whatever.
So number 6 was identifying all funding sources and determining their allocation models. So broadly speaking, this gets into things like copy fees or search fees or you know some of those smaller fee categories that go into the Shropshire Trust Fund and come back to the courts, and how does that relate to WAFM or doesn't relate to WAFM? So that's a question we've received before.
And I would add one more thing to that. Line item, so it's identify all funding sources, including subsidies, because one of the things we're finding is that there are benefits that some courts receive that are not dollars, that don't show up as a line item in their budgets, that don't show up as dollars coming into a court.
Can you give me an example?
For example, when we were looking at in the ad hoc working group, there were in the EPP program, the Enterprise Policy Planning, that program, there were a number of courts that were receiving services that they did not have to pay for, and the CCTC folks were able to attribute a dollar amount to the services they were providing while actually no money was changing hands. So I think if we're going to say, you know, I'm Marin and I have to pay for all of my network services, but you know, County X doesn't have to pay for those services. They get the services for free, even though we know what the value of those services are. Those kinds of things potentially belong in, you know, an identification process. I'm not saying that we necessarily – I think we need to know what they are so we can decide whether there's an impact and whether we have a reaction to them.
Well, does it make sense to identify it as – the OED, you know, when you're looking at your averages and stuff, you're actually not reflecting truly what it is costing you to support.
Do you see that as different than looking under the indefinite line, which is the impact of JCC provided services? Is that separate from that, or is that a subset of that?
I think it actually belongs in the identified funding sources, because I think it is actually, you know, definable benefits that courts receive, and like Mary Beth was just saying, in some cases the beneficiary courts are small courts, and it's because they didn't have, you know, their own IT shop or whatever. So they're getting those benefits that are not showing up in their bottom line in their budget. But in addition to that, they're also getting a bump on their OE&E because they're small courts. And so I think, you know, all that stuff kind of needs to be looked at as one sort of package to figure out if we've weighted those factors correctly.
And the commerce of the bump in their OE&E. What's happening is we start to remove some of these funding sources. The funding's just not there.
Right.
Their OE&E is under-reflecting what it really costs them in WAFA. And so
right. It's
making sure we're really capturing what does it cost.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the bigger conversation is I think if courts don't pay for everything, they don't know what those things cost, and they don't have any way to evaluate whether the deal they're getting is the right deal. So one of the things that we gain from sort of, you know, surfacing these subsidies and whatever else we want to call them is that courts, for the first time, some of these courts probably don't even realize they're getting a subsidy. So if they see, well, you know, my subsidy is, you know, 150 $50,000 for something, and I'm a two-judge court, well, maybe I just need to hire, you know, Acme network analyst down the street for, you know, $50,000, and I can get the job done. So it's you know, to make good business decisions, business managers need to have information. And I think, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with what's happened. These were all sanctioned, you know, programs and what have you, but now we need to, just like Colin did, have to go back in the historical record and find them and bring them to everyone's attention.
Cool. I don't disagree with Kim that that should be addressed at some point, but I think I asked for six to be added to the funding methodology work plan, and I had something much, much less broad in mind, which was, are there other pots of money like 1058 or like dependency court funding that get distributed on something other than a workload-based model?
Oh, okay.
Sort of let's identify areas where we have to think about distribution of funds as such on a basis other than workload. So I think that was the narrower question that we were supposed to try to ask.
But as far as people can involve in the session, I think we ought to also include a lot of small courts still have connections with their county for services at little or no cost to them.
Right.
That have never, they were never reflected in the historic base. Either the counties weren't aware that they could charge for these or that they didn't have to perform those. So I think that needs to be another part of the discussion for the O&E for some of these smaller courts.
I agree, Debbie.
So may I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you're looking. Well, so first of all, assuming that everyone agrees with Chris and Ellen that the civil assessment should be this year, and if we all agree that you're not willing to dedicate your weekends to work for us, too, then I'm wondering if... I'm wondering if I would either suggest that six go down and incorporate what Judge Kuhl suggested, which is all of the revenue sources that provide the allocations, and Kim's and the other comments, which I do think are related to indefinite one as well, but push six down, and then whether or not you could continue to do two, five, and six, which I think are a big nut crack. I'm thinking you might even want to consider the to, you know, group those and move it down, because if it's just an offset, regardless of how it changes, it'll still be an offset until you look at how it's tied in to the self-help and the other piece. But
so bundle two, three, and five and move them down, Sherry? Is
yeah.
That your...
Well, so three would continue, because whatever five comes up with,
right.
It's going to continue to be an offset. But how it's tied into... five and two is going to be a bigger issue, because now we're talking about how it's measured in RAS and how the funding works and what pieces are left, and it's a bigger piece.
So move two down?
Well, can I just ask a question? So are you suggesting that we proceed with five, for example, and determine how we're going to distribute the 1058 funds, but hold the issue of what effect that would have on, or should have on WAFM?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because when you do your work and the funding methodology changes from historical base to some other measurement, if a court changes from $5 to 10 or from $15 to 10, the offset will still happen. It's just that it'll be offset at a different value, and then we need to figure out in the RAS, WAFM and piece how it should happen next year.
Judge, let me make one other comment before we go to you. So the other element that isn't included in here that Colin has raised and other staff have raised is that there are some elements within WAFM that we haven't touched since we developed the model, which hasn't been too long at this point, but there are some like OE&E, we're not adjusting that for inflation. There's been no increase in OE&E. There's other categories within the model itself that are sort of fixed at what we created when we created the model, and we haven't built into the work plan anywhere, and I'm not saying it has to be this year, but we haven't built into the work plan anywhere. When is that going to get another review? So I just wanted, before we...
Or a refresh. I mean, that might be an easy decision that we just use new averages and refresh it once it's reviewed quickly, right?
I mean, that all has to be defined, but whether that's done this year, I just want to put out there on the table before we get to, I feel like we're starting to move pieces. I just want to put out that that is a piece that isn't listed here, but we need to address at some point. So, and then Judge Good.
Judge Good.
I'm just curious if anybody has any ideas of what dollar magnitude is attached to each of these questions. Do we have a sense of which of them the questions that are most likely to have a significant impact on courts? And then the further question in my mind is, do we try to do those in dollar order or only do a big dollar order then each year? I don't know, but I don't know what the impact of this is. Description is.
Well, regardless, the Judicial Council has directed a couple of these, right? So it's directed number five happen this year. It's directed that number four happen this year. So
okay,
I don't think we have a lot of discretion on that.
Okay, with respect to the others,
well, let's see. So, I mean, all other funding sources, I don't know that we know the answer to that. That's kind of the reason for it being on the list to begin with. You know, civil assessments are 150 or 200?
Almost 160 million.
160 million annually. Technology funding, again, that's one where I think we're trying to look at, well, what is that? What should that be? I mean, a little more on that one, the context there is that when we built the OE&E expenses, that really was taking an average of courts. That didn't look at, well, what is it that a court really needs in order to operate effectively today? You know, we didn't take... I'm going to pick on Alan, but we didn't take Orange County and say, this is what we all really need, because Orange is ahead on technology and delivering what we would want. Their technology budget is, I would guess, proportionately higher than mine because they're doing those things we would want. But we didn't take theirs. We took an average. So is that really sufficient for us to deliver the service that people are demanding of us? So that could be quite a large number, potentially.
But you get a trade-off.
You do.
We were looking at it because of the V3 stuff.
Yes.
We reduced... I think 58 people when we went to e-filing and some of the other stuff. So, you know, yeah, my IT budget's bigger, but my staff budget's smaller.
Right.
Often kind of washes all.
I agree.
It does wash that.
Fine.
That's right. It washes it now until we update the RAS model, and if that starts to, of course, move. Anyway.
So we need to look at your RAS rating.
No. Okay. So with that backdrop, Judge, I don't know if that's helpful.
So can I just say there is also one other thing that's not on our work plan that we might want to start thinking about, and that is when we get to the five-year WAFA mark, and we're at, what's that, 17, 18, and if we're not fully funded, what do we do? So we never talked about, I mean, we did a five-year implementation to get us to 50%. With the hope, I think, that we would be better funded and it wouldn't matter. But if we are not fully funded when we get there.
But we're already past 50% on WAFA.
It depends. I think it depends on how you look at it, right?
Either way.
You're talking about reallocation, right?
Yeah.
See, he's, right. Yep, right.
So by the time we get to the so-called 50%, we may be done or close to done, depending on new money.
Yeah. But I think what Judge Earl is saying is if we don't get a lot more new money, because new money drags old dollars along with it. So if we lost, I can't remember the numbers anymore, $1.2 billion or something, and we've only come back $248 million, so we're not even a quarter of the way back yet. So if we don't get...
Yeah, the problem is our filings are going down, so our...
I know. So we're not going to get back to 1.2. That is not probably a reasonable expectation. I mean...
So before we maybe hone in on what we're taking off and moving in, one other just reminder is that for items that are going to change WAFM itself, I think we had an agreement. I think it's... I'm not sure what that formally means, but... that the idea is we want to make those changes by early in the calendar year, so when those first runs of the model come out in March and April, everybody knows what to expect. So, you know, our work plan year, when we look at it by fiscal year, is actually fairly short because it means that really the work has to be done December, January to sync up with a trial court budget advisory committee meeting that might be in, you know, that's some more time frame. So when we look at these, it is a shortened period of time, so how much we can really tackle realistically, it does come down to about 6 months from now. What can be accomplished in 6 months? Now, some, you know, the issue of what happens after 17, 18, well, that might carry over into the next year. That, you know, that's not as much of an issue. But if it's going to impact the underlying calculation, the commitment we've made previously to all each other is, well, we want to know that early in the calendar year, so as we're all trying to plan and project for July, we aren't getting hit with some major fluctuation in the calculation late in the year. So it sounds like, just to kind of summarize what I think the discussion was, is that one would stay. Whether that gets completed in this year, I would question that actually getting done by January, but at least started. Sounds like one would stay. I think, Sherry, if I'm understanding you correctly, 2 and 3 would really fall into next fiscal year because those are dependent upon completion of 5.
Well, 3 would continue because you're going to always offset 1068 regardless of what the committee decides.
Right. This should say review or reevaluate. So the way the model exists would stay, but really 2 and 3 would become a 16-17 review because they need to wait for number, what's listed as currently number 5 to finish. So you still leave number 1. Number 4 would come off because that's now just a trial court budget advisory committee issue. It doesn't need to come back here. It has its own funding source. Mm-hmm. So you do that with 1 and 5. It sounds like there was some discussion that 6, could be Judge Kuhl's point, if it's other funding sources, then maybe that analysis could start late in the fiscal year so that it's ready to be up for next year, but really that gets pushed down towards the end of the year. Moving the impact of civil assessments as it relates to WAFM. So really focusing that is the issue of funding, the dialogue may include some of the political realities and the fact that this is in lieu of a warrant, but really this here is intended to be talking about, well, how are we handling it as it relates to WAFM and WAFM-related funding, that would need to move up necessarily because of both amnesty and the general discussion that's going on related to civil assessments overall. It doesn't get into the issue that Kim brought up and Debbie sort of was talking about too, related to judicial counsel staff provided services or subsidies, but
subsidies may not be a great word. It's not a very artful word, but it's, you know, benefits that go to the courts that don't end up in their budget documents.
Well, is that
that connected to this?
Right, that's that.
Is that? That's the indefinite. That's what we have under indefinite. They're similar.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not just JCC. It's other things. Yeah.
So is it the idea that it's all of those types of services? So there's other efforts that are going on to look at things like
investigation. That's, again, a framing issue because you want to, you know, it's a big elephant.
Yeah.
So
do we want to look at just the operating expense calculation
of the provided services?
I guess overall, right? I mean, if the idea is that we haven't updated it for changes in inflation,
fresh pieces.
Right. Could we include that look of what is
currently spent?
May not have been initially included when people looked at what are my operating expenses when we made that calculation. There were expenses that were paid by the county, potentially, or paid by JC that weren't included in that initial calculation that should have been, right? So that would then become part of the court's need. Does that make sense?
Well, that's true to include it as long as they're paying for it. But if
right.
you're getting it for free and you include it as an expense, right. and they continue to get it for free, I would say that's a problem.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Yeah.
But is that something to tackle this fiscal year, or is that if we're looking at civil assessments and technology, what? No. If we look at technology, do we almost necessarily have to look at it?
Well, and the technology funding stream, and I wonder to what extent our efforts, the budget committee's efforts of looking at these idea of saving within the trust fund for large purchases will address some of this. And that ad hoc work group is meeting today after the budget committee meeting to start talking about that.
I'm not sure how we're resolving that. So it sounds like we keep number 1, civil assessments moves up into the current year. We keep what's listed as number 5. So that's technology funding, whatever comes out of the joint working group on. Coming off facilitator, child support commissioner, and civil assessments, right? So that's 3.
And Jake, I think for 16-17, I do think you need to talk about refreshing
based on a snapshot. We need to establish a policy, I think. I mean, what I would propose is that we establish a policy that it gets refreshed almost every year, every other year, based on actuals. And during that, if we need to talk about what's free and what's not free and what was included, what's not included, we can do that for the first time. But we shouldn't end up with a model that was old, like the one Waffle was supposed to replace, right? So if that means that it goes to 16-17, I think that's fine, but we need to talk about what will be in the model to refresh automatically, right? I thought it was going to. Look at it, yeah, right? We never talked about it.
Otherwise, we'll be back right back in the same situation.
Exactly, yeah.
One point of clarification, too, just so you're aware, as it relates to the methodology for determining what was and was not included in the OEM, there isn't all the documentation necessary. We can't recreate how those amounts were determined originally. So that would be part of this refresh, which would be actually I've gone through the information you guys have provided, and
I may still have a bunch of stuff that I think they would.
Okay. Well,
all I can say is the part that
understood,
I
though. I mean, your point is
understood. The administrative factor. I have a file that fits. I'm assuming you do too.
Right. Pisco.
I also think that the what to do once we hit the 50% or the 5-year period, whether it's 50% or not, I think that ought to be on a 16-17. We need to start that conversation.
Well, it's got to be really early in 16-17.
When is it 17-18?
I'm just assuming that it's too late for this year. But maybe I shouldn't assume that.
I mean, the dial-up is starting. I mean, if this work finishes up and all the calculation and the math and the algebra is done in January, then there is still the February to June. If you assume it wouldn't have an impact till
that's fine. I just don't think it'll be
late. I agree. Judge Cool?
I'm going to ask the same question I asked earlier. So as I gather, we're going to address the impact of civil assessments this year.
Yes.
So what questions do you need to answer?
Yeah, you didn't answer that.
And maybe I should have that answer to my own question, but I don't, so.
Well, I think, as I understand it, as Jake said earlier, is whether or not to count civil assessment as revenue that should be included or considered when assessing an individual court's WAFM need.
WAFM-related funding.
WAFM-related funding.
The question is, should civil assessment revenue that's retained by the court be counted towards WAFM-related funding? Or should a portion, or how do you define that? I mean, that is really the question as it relates to WAFM. And unfortunately, that gets into a whole lot of as the discussion earlier this morning showed, that every court has been different on how that shook out initially and what do they keep versus what goes into the trial court trust fund portion of the civil assessment. So, but really the issue here is of whatever is collected in civil assessments, whether that's $0 or $80 billion, should that money be counted towards a court's WAFM-related funding.
Well, Jake, if not expanded them to what about the $48 million we owe the county?
I see that as a problem.
Me
I think
too.
It's part of the conversation.
That was my question. But I don't know if this is right.
But I guess I don't.
Well, let's find an alternative. I guess we need to find a permanent alternative than that individual court. Those 30 whatever individual courts having to come up with that money. That's what I'm saying because I'm telling you the 70 thing is going to blow up in our faces.
It's only 20 courts.
Mike, or 20. Is it only 20?
Okay. It's great because then it's going to involve CSAC and the counties because they're going to want their $48 million because they've always counted on their $48 million.
No, they already have it, Mike, because the statute decreases their MOE payment. So the counties are whole.
Yeah.
Always view that as their money.
Yeah,
the fact that we now have changed the accounting methodology doesn't obviate the fact that if they were getting the money before, they essentially it went against their MOE.
But they still will, because the statute.
But somebody's going to have to make up for that $48 million
right.
some other way.
But the branch will be making
right.
the
yeah.
hole in the trust.
That.
That's
how are we going
right.
to do that?
Yeah.
I'm very interested in how we're going to do that. Yeah.
Well, just so you know, I mean, the discussion of the civil assessments when the initially some of the reaction by the Senate leadership was, well, let's just reduce this burden. And staff said, that's a couple $100 million problem. All of a sudden, it was, let's study it. So the staff have identified, the longstanding staff who have worked on this area in the legislature, said, you reduce that, there is a cost to those who are getting the revenues now. It's not just as simple as reducing it without an impact. So they've put the leadership on notice that it's not a free choice to make.
So the reason I think it's related, Jake, and may I use San Bernardino as an example?
Sure.
Okay. Is because I think San Bernardino is the second or third most underfunded,
second most underfunded
county.
Second highest after LA.
Okay, well, so let's talk about the WAPA. So if you look at the fact that they're the second or third most underfunded, but they have the second highest burden in making up a Trout Court Trust Fund whole because of the MOE reduction, that does impact their available funding when you're looking at the amnesty this year, because if they lose, if they're gaining now $2 million, I don't know what they're gaining, but if they gain $2 million over the four they have to contribute, and now it's zeroed, now they're significantly more underfunded. If it goes below the four, we're eating it anyway. So it is something that needs to be considered, because their relative funding in WASM is going to have an impact when that reduction comes in because of the no civil assessment on the amnesty.
Mike?
Just for uniform civil filing fees, I might be where Sherry is, but I'm not, because not all programs are created equal. Not all programs are either aggressive or not aggressive in pursuing revenues. The local agreements result in different net amounts coming to the courts, and I think we've fundamentally going to have to look at all of those issues, because to simply attribute this as part of some standardized, if this piece goes down, they're going to be worse funded, ignores the reality that civil assessments started and grew up in an environment where they were completely separate from standard court operating expenses, and it's only been because they're now part of our budgets because we've been cut so badly that I'm concerned about making adjustments without considering all of those factors.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just saying that we can't cut out the part of the MOEs were statutorily reduced, and rather than having a general fund offset like in every other instance, the burden was placed on individual counties. And I use San Bernardino because I know their hole is significantly bigger in WAPM. So as they continue to lose in what has helped them pass the, you know, the offset, the cost recovery, there's a small piece that will further reduce their operations. And so I don't know what that is, and I don't, but it's going to get complicated.
So that's why it's been pushed out each year. That's why we didn't address it originally. That's why it's been pushed out, because it's complicated. Judge, I'm trying to answer your question. I think the problem is that there are three or four different things that are going on, and I don't know that anyone is really going to be sure what direction it's going to go until a group gets together to talk about it and say, okay, well, are we going to address each of these pieces or only half of them? Are we going to put some of them aside for another day? Part of the challenge that's come up is that when we try to look at what is the WAFM funding need, what we are not at 100% funding. So really what has been shared largely as well, the gap when it was $600 million, right, if the number was right, or whatever the number was, but when it was $879 million, there was $200 million of revenue that we didn't really account for one way or the other, including civil assessment money. And so when there was discussion, it was saying, well, you're not going to give us $800 million anyway, so we'll figure out that $200 million before we get close to you giving us that money if there was already funds available for it. Well, as was already kind of mentioned briefly, is we're all seeing filings generally going down, which means the total statewide need under WAFM is coming down. At some point, we're going to reach that level where that gap is equal to the amount of money we haven't really addressed on where does that revenue go. Civil assessment is the largest piece of that. So it sort of gets us to this dialogue of where should it go? Is that money that is available? Or is it, well, it's only available, to Mike's point, because out of necessity it shouldn't be. Maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe that is money that should be a dedicated technology funding source. I don't know. I'm not trying to advocate any specific policy, but I think until that all gets opened up and these issues of, well, that really means these courts are helping fund everyone else with the trial court trust fund at a greater burden than other people because they're collecting,
how to dissect that issue.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it doesn't matter if civil assessments remain, but what if they don't? What if amnesty does have a massive impact and people can't meet that obligation? Is it an obligation? I mean, the court never signed on for it to be an obligation, so that's another question. So I think the answer is look at civil assessment revenue.
I guess what I'm hearing is that we have one piece of this, that the problem is potential reductions in collections of civil assessments, broadly speaking, and that has two potential impacts, the first being on individual courts, some individual courts with respect to their own collections that they are counting on as part of how they're living their lives, and the other is the potential that the trial court trust fund is going to have a shortfall if we in that first adjustment column. Are those the two policy issues that we face?
At the least.
And the reason I'm trying to define it is because policymakers in our branch here may need to start talking more quickly to the Department of Finance, maybe about a BCP or something, coming out of this.
Would it be helpful, do you think, if a smaller group within this group got together and started to kind of unravel all the different pieces and all the different issues that are related to that and bring back to us so that maybe that's where the first...
Do you think this group's too big? Yes, that's a great idea.
Yeah, I think a smaller group and you know, again, thinking of it as a judicial officer. What is the question presented? The
right.
Series of questions presented here.
Okay. So I'll send out an email to solicit some folks to be involved in that.
But it sounds like, yes, we want it on the agenda or the work plan.
We want it on the work plan, and it sounds like it's maybe at the top of the work plan for 15-16. And then did you want to reorder then the work plan for 15-16? Are we just – was this in priority? No. Okay. It's not.
So what I have down, just as a summary, is that for 15-16 we'd be looking at technology funding streams and whether there's a way to – have a dedicated funding stream. The Joint Working Group on Child Support Commissioner and Family Law Facilitator, civil assessments broadly, and what occurs post 17-18. And that would then push to 16-17 is the self-help and 1058 revenue credit discussion and how that interplays. Other funding sources and their allocation models, the methodology around OE&E and how to refresh that, including what things may have been missed because they are an implicit, they're an in-kind contribution or an implicit payment for something else that may have been missed. So those things would push to 16-17.
As well as a discussion on what happens after 17-18.
I had that in 15-16.
Oh, okay. Anything else that... So in order to, technically, in order to amend our work plan, we need a motion.
I move amendment of the work plan as stated.
All right. Judge Coates, second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Anything else? The last item on our agenda is an open discussion. If there's anything else that you all wanted to raise, things you think we should be turning our attention to that we haven't already talked about. I don't see anyone eager to do that. We've talked about a lot, I think, today. I did want to, before we close, acknowledge a couple people who's today's their last meeting with us, unfortunately. One is Kim Turner, who in like 10 days or so will be retired.
12 days.
Yeah, that's right.
7 hours, 26 minutes, and 32 seconds, yeah.
Hopefully you will come back as a consultant, an unpaid consultant.
I would be very, very happy to do that. This is important work, and like somebody says, all the historians are, you know, getting old and doddering and leaving the branch. So, well, Mike is old and doddering. I'm just leaving the branch.
I do want to thank you, Kim, for your participation over the last year, and I'm not sure that you anticipated how fun it would be.
It was fun.
How kind of intense the issues would be. I know you've done a lot of work for us on the ad hoc working group with the technology, and we certainly thank you for that, and like I said, hope that we still have your phone number.
Absolutely. Judge Earl, I've said it before, and I will say it to you again. If I can help in any way, I'm happy to do so. I'm in school Tuesdays and Thursdays, but other than that, I'm at your disposal.
Perfect. Kim Flenner, it's Kim's last meeting because she is joining the council. And Kim was with us from the beginning when we started talking about WAFM, and then suddenly Mary Beth started showing up with her as an officious intermeddler. But it worked out. So I want to thank you for all you've done, and, of course, the children's waiting room work that you did for us was just tremendous and a little frustrating, I know, at times, but we got there, and we got through it. But I want to thank you for all that you've done, and I hope you find the council to be as rewarding as you found this. So, and last but not least, it is Jake's last meeting, because Jake, too, has been picked by the chief. Picked by the chief to join the Judicial Council, and try as I may to keep him here in discussions with her. It did not work, much maybe to Jake's relief, I suppose. But, you know, I told the chief in my efforts to try to keep him here that he's WAFM. He's the brain. He's the math. He knows these things better than all of us. So we certainly expect you to continue to participate in our meetings, even as an ex officio member. But I do want to thank you for your contribution, all you've done for us and for me, because I don't know half of this without you and all those phone calls that I sent, saying, okay, you have to explain this to me in a different way, because I don't think I fully, in my legal mind, understand it. So thank you.
It's been fun, and I have to thank all the Judicial Council staff, because they are very responsive when we're trying to work on these massive spreadsheets and try and explain them and find, you know, well, wait a minute, what does this column mean or that column mean? And it's a lot of spreadsheets, and the model we created is massive in terms of spreadsheets, and so I just appreciate their help all through it, because it makes us all look good that they do all the heavy lifting on the back end. So.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you
so much, really.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Just don't break it, okay?
Yeah. Well, you're there to provide oversight.
Oh, right.
You and Kimberly. That's right. Well, we are going to end our meeting and thereby end our phone call. Until next time.
Great.